Oh, well, Chris and Steve, thanks for talking to me today on The Interpreter. I've got in front of me here a copy of The Mandarin Code, which I enjoyed thoroughly. It's the sequel to the Marmalade Files. Just tell us quickly about the two books and how the second one follows on from the first.
Thanks, Sam. Yeah, The Mandarin Code is a sequel to The Marmalade Files, which was published about 2 years ago. And in fact, The Mandarin Code is the second in a trilogy. So we will come up with another book sometime down the track. So The Mandarin Code is similarly to Marmalade Files. It's a political thriller, a satirical thriller, you might call it. It's very much anchored in Canberra. But it also draws in particularly the interplay, if you like, between China, America, and Australia. So we really tried to explore with the Mandarin Code this you know, critical question facing Australia of that challenge of how it confronts or how it deals with the challenge of America and China as they jostle for global supremacy. So we wanted to anchor it in Canberra. We wanted it to be a fast-paced thriller. We wanted it to be entertaining, but we also wanted to really draw in some of the, real-life scenarios that are playing out in this sort of big geopolitical battle that's taking place between America and China that draws in key allies like Japan, and that we've seen over the past 12, 24 months really, really start to sort of percolate and come to the surface.
Well, you've definitely succeeded there, and I want to ask you a bit more about the China-America angle in a moment, but it occurs to me that it's not the Canberra-based political thriller is not a vast genre, is it? Was there something in particular that inspired you guys? Are there other novels in this genre that you look to?
No, not really. We actually thought that there was a space in the market, if you like, for something like this. People have written about politics before, particularly books about Victorian state politics, New South Wales state politics, but we genuinely wanted to explore the world of Canberra, which we think is a whole lot more interesting than most people in Australia might imagine. And, you know, there are a lot of books out about Canberra, about politics, but they're all non-fiction, and we wanted to do something that was fiction, so we could draw on the 40 years of combined experience that we had of working in the Parliamentary Press Gallery or working in and around Canberra, and also add the sorts of things that you could just never write about in our day job. So we wanted to do something that was interesting, that was entertaining, above all, something that was fun, but something that also had a little bit of an edge to it, that was close to the bone, a landscape that people could easily see the relationships with, and also to take on, in some small way, some of the larger questions.
Yeah, and just further to that, Sam, I mean, Australia basically has imported political drama. You know, we're all great fans of State of Play and House of Cards and West Wing and this satire like Think of It out of Britain, but we've never really done it in Australia. We've had a bit of a go with things like The Hollow Men and Utopia and some of those wonderful comedy dramas, if you like. But we actually wanted to establish a political drama genre in Australia. We wanted to do it with books. So this is our second book, but we were also hoping that we might develop it as far as film or television is concerned. And so, you know, we're really, really, really pleased that the two books are being developed into a six-part miniseries.
Ah, so the miniseries, and there has been a little bit of media announcing that this was going to happen. So the miniseries will be based on two books or on the trilogy?
No, it will be based on two books right. So far. It's Matchbox Pictures, which has picked up the option on those two books, and they will be shooting, hopefully, in the middle of next year, and it will go to air on Foxtel, and obviously sometime after that, so probably, I would imagine now, sometime in 2016 or at the very earliest, late 2015. But we've been working with Matchbox for some time now. We gave them the first book. They wanted a little bit more. We gave them the synopsis of the second, and now we've been working as consultant on those six scripts. So it'll be a six-part miniseries.
And I think people who've read the books would, and who know about this miniseries, will be imagining who might inhabit these various characters you've created. Can you tell us anything about the casting?
We wish we had more to do with that. Yeah, casting's probably a little way down the track. Look, what they're doing at present with the miniseries is they've got some of Australia's leading scriptwriters who are working
on developing this six-part miniseries. It's 6 hours of TV, which is a lot of TV, and of course it's got to be adapted for the screen. So there's a hell of a lot of work that goes into that. In terms of who might play some of the leading characters, look, that's yet to be decided, but this is going to be a big budget series. The budget is somewhere north of $8 million. It's got the support of Screen Australia and Screen ACT, and so they'll be looking for a high-quality cast, but that is, you know, sometime down the track.
Well, it's very exciting. Let's talk about the China part of the plot. Actually, without getting into the specifics of the plot, I want to ask you to draw on your experience in Canberra as journalists in Canberra. What sense you have of the way China is viewed among political leaders? You talked just previously, Chris, about, you know, what's gone on in the last 12 to 24 months. Do our leaders worry privately about China's assertiveness much more than they can say publicly?
They do worry about it privately, but publicly, as you would well know, Sam, is that if you ask anyone in the Labor Party or in the Liberal Party, anyone in the coalition, about what their view of China is, they will always come out with a standard line, and that is that there is no reason for Australia to make a choice between its military alliance with the United States and its economic relationship with China, and that's really a party line that crosses both parties now. But privately, they do worry about what's been going on in China, particularly in the recent past, where they see a more assertive China. They are concerned about what happened in the Senkaku Islands, and then we saw a public dressing down of our foreign minister by the Chinese foreign minister in Beijing when she dared to raise the problems in the East China Sea. So we know that the Chinese take it very seriously whenever Australia dares to speak up. It was unusual for Julie Bishop to say anything public. The response was quite extraordinary in terms of that dressing down. So that gives you perhaps a bit of an insight into what's going on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And there is a recognition that that challenge or that that new dynamic we have with China as our largest trading partner, with America as our most important strategic and military ally, that is a really tough challenge. I mean, people recognise that. You talk to people at the highest level within this government, they recognise that challenge of Japan and China that have been quite aggressive towards each other, particularly over the Senkaku, that poses a real challenge for Australia. But let's bring it back to Canberra. I mean, we have seen in the last several years, I mean, it's been publicly reported that the Chinese government, in one form or another, hacked into the parliamentary emails, and when Julie Gillard was Prime Minister, allegedly hacked into her email. So, I mean, that's been happening over the last several years in Canberra, and that must have some influence on thinking towards Canberra. And at the same time, we've seen the building, the construction of a brand new Chinese embassy, essentially an annex to the existing Chinese embassy, which of course was bugged by the Australians and the Americans back in the 80s when it was built. But we've seen a new embassy emerge. It's now operating a couple of hundred metres from the old Chinese embassy, if you like. And that building was extraordinary. It was surrounded by razor wire, a 6-7 foot colour bond fence. It had CCTV cameras on every corner, and it was off limits to the Australian unions. It was off limits to the ACT building inspector. China shipped in their own labour from Beijing or from parts of China to build it. Why? Because they wanted to ensure that it would not be bugged by the Australians or the Americans or the Brits or anyone else. So it was quite an extraordinary sort of development as it took place over the last couple of years. It gave us great material from which to then construct a fictitious literary plot, and that's what we've done with the Mandarin Code.
So, Steve, that takes me to the other subject I wanted to ask you about, the other strong theme of the book, which is the Australian intelligence world. I wondered, again, drawing on your experience in Canberra and the press gallery, what do our politicians make of the intelligence agencies? What's the relationship like between governments and the intelligence world?
Well, I think right at the minute, given everything that's going on with the Middle East, etc., they're relying on them very, very heavily. We've seen that obviously in recent days. But look, I think generally, speaking as somebody who's lived and worked in Canberra for the last 25 years, generally speaking, there's obviously a very close relationship between government and the intelligence operations. The great thing about Canberra, one of the great things I love about it, is that you can go and watch your kids play soccer on a Saturday morning, and you know, you
standing on the sidelines, and next door is somebody who's a deputy director general of ASIO, or the number three in DSD, or one or the other intelligence operations. That's a great thing about Canberra. We were signing books recently, and the chief of army happened to walk by, and we engaged in a conversation with him. That's a great thing about Canberra, that everybody seems to know each other. And of course, you've got, 50, 60, 70 foreign embassies, all of whom have spies, either declared or non-declared. So it's a rich tapestry, if you like, from which to draw and to write about, as you say, fictitious spies, and weaving them in and out of our narrative, and trying to make an exciting sort of political thriller that really delves into that relationship between the politicians, between the defence establishment, between the intelligence establishment, between journalists and other public servants, and try to sort of write about that in a way that I guess does give the reader some insights into how that those relationships really work.
Well, Steve, Chris, thanks for your time today. Congratulations on the book, and wish you every success for the miniseries.
Thanks, Sam. Cheers, Sam. Thanks so much.